Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Meeple Skills, the only podcast that gets the munchies playing Munchkin.
It's bad.
That was really bad.
That was bad.
Like, that was definitely on a level of bad that our other jokes haven't been quite as bad.
That's true.
Yeah, yikes.
So our theme this month is springtime games. It is now May, even though it's almost summer now. But we've got a lineup of games. Of course, my name is Ethan, with my lovely co-hosts.
Jackie Lemmer.
And Alyssa Sexton.
Ah, she has sex in her name. Did I make that joke last episode,
you did.
Too?
Yeah, you
did. Sweet.
You did.
Perfect. Okay, so, what are we doing? Three or four games today?
Three games?
That's right. Okay. We're going to be talking about Takenoko, Photosynthesis, and Dinosaur Tea Party.
Because you always have tea parties in the spring.
They seem like the best time to have tea parties.
Exactly, because that's when like all the blossoms are pink, and they always have pictures of tea parties with like pink cherry blossom trees around.
And flowers and stuff.
Exactly.
And, you know, giant reptiles.
Well, we'll get to that part.
Yes.
So the first game on our list, Takenoko, is a 2-4 player game from Bombix Games. The point of the game is to build a beautiful bamboo garden. On each player's turn, they roll a die that indicates the weather on that particular turn and has a special effect that impacts the game for that turn. And then you're able to select 2 of 5 available actions. The actions include selecting and laying tiles, taking an irrigation bar, moving and feeding the panda, moving the gardener, or taking a new goal card. Once a player has revealed 9 goal cards, the end of the game is triggered. The cards are worth different amounts of victory points, so the person with the most points at the end wins. This is a game we've played quite a few times now, and it feels like every time we've played it, we've learned something else about it. It took us a couple tries to get it right exactly on how to play it. But Jackie, what are your thoughts?
I, of course, absolutely love this game. And part of the reason it's great is because the components are 3D. And so, like, as you're building the bamboo garden, you're literally building it up. So you play the tiles, and the tiles are all little different colors, and then you put the different colors of bamboo on the different tiles. And so you end up with this really colorful and gorgeous bamboo garden by the end of it. It's so much fun. It is a lighter strategy game. It obviously still has a lot of strategy to it, but because you have the 5 options that you can choose from and you get to do 2 of the 5 on every turn, you can easily think ahead and kind of try to get your garden planned the way you need to. Because what's fun about it is it's almost semi-cooperative, because you're all playing off the same board. So your opponents could potentially play in a way that actually benefits you and causes you to get more points. Alternatively, you could also make a misplay that would cause your opponents to get more points. So for that reason, it keeps it just enough variables in there that it keeps the game interesting and gives it a lot of replayability. And then, of course, the little token for the panda and the gardener is really cute as well. And one of the weathers that you can roll is a lightning storm, and it scares the panda, and then it has to go to somewhere else in the garden and eat a bamboo. And I just think that imagery is really cute of the panda getting scared and just goes and eats and stuffs his face.
Okay, then. where would you put it on the like it scale?
For me, this one is definitely an 8 on the like it scale. It is beautiful. It is super fun to play. Has a lot of replayability. I really can't think of any complaints about it. I honestly think the only reason it isn't higher for me on the like it scale is because it's, once you get to know how it plays, it's almost a little too easy. I'm a Euro gamer to a fault. So I like my lots of complicated rules. But this is a really great light game to play. I can teach my family how to play it very easily, and they really enjoyed it. So it's a great game to have in your collection.
All right, and the friend or foe scale?
To me, this is easily an Uno level foe scale, so maybe like a 2 or a 3. because yes, you can play into your opponents potentially getting more points, and that's kind of frustrating, but the rules are very simple. The weather creates a little bit of variables that make it a little bit different in gameplay that could be frustrating or could be perfect for you. Because of the way the weather die works, it does make it kind of hard to get special tokens that go on the board. They have different special tokens that allow things like watershed or making it an extra fertile little hexagon on the board. And those are, you can only get those when you roll a certain thing on the weather die. And so that is another infuriating part that would keep it from being totally not on the faux scale.
Wonderful. Alyssa, why don't you tell us about your take on Takenoko?
I mean, Jackie pretty much said about everything I was probably going to say.
Wow, what a jerk.
I know.
I'm sorry.
Aesthetically, it's very pleasing. It's the colors are nice and muted, so it's not like, whoo, she loud. But the whole building, the bamboo is really cute. I'm sure kids would actually love this game, assuming they're not so young that they're going to put the, you know, put the pieces in their mouth. Kids could probably pick up this game really well, too, so it'd probably be really good for families.
So I'm not supposed to put the pieces in my mouth?
No.
Whoops.
Good to know.
We're going to need a new copy of Takenoko.
That's disgusting.
Hey, just be glad it was only my mouth.
Yikes.
Yikes. We'll be going to the emergency room now.
I get my stomach pumped.
That's fine. It's split. It's
so what do you put it on your personal like it scale?
Probably an 8. 7 or 8. Like, there's not really anything I really hate about it. The dice can make things a little frustrating just because it's random chance. So, you know, if nobody rolls anything they need, you're just sitting there like, cool, we'll get there someday. But it's definitely not something that, like, is really an issue or anything. Like, it's a good game. It's a fun game. I don't get mad when I play it, so it's a good sign.
And so you agree with Jackie's evaluation of the friend or foe scale?
Oh, definitely. Like, it's a chill enough game and a cute enough game that it's like, oh, I'm losing horribly, but, you know, that's fine. I'm going to move this little panda, he's going to eat this, and life will be good.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I think I concur with both of you on that one. Mm-hmm. It is kind of adorable, and it's kind of relaxing a little bit. Like, you can make it a high-pressure, gotta-win game if you want to, but you can also just, like, hang out and grow bamboo.
Exactly.
I feel that.
And to me, like, just the building of it and having, like, at the finished product, it's still very pretty, so to me, that's kind of relaxing.
I can see that.
Any final thoughts on Takenoko?
It's cute. Buy it.
Very good. Also, make sure to buy it on one of our Project Nerd affiliate links on Amazon.com. All right, so our next game on our springtime theme is Photosynthesis. It's a game for 2 to 4 players from Blue Orange Games. Point of the game is to grow wood and throw shade, literally. The game board is comprised of rows of circular plots that players use to grow a seed into a tree. Each plot has a different amount of leaves on it, and these leaves correspond to tokens. The more leaves, the more points the token will be worth. There's also a crescent sun that rotates around the board. Each time the sun makes a full rotation, a counter is removed. Players get 4 rotations to gain as many points as possible. Each time the sun moves to a new spot, players need to count up their sunshine points. The trees are what give players those points. Big trees are worth 3, medium are 2, and little trees are worth 1 point. Seeds do not gain sunlight points. On their turns, players spend their sunshine points to prep a tree or a seed, plant a seed, upgrade a tree, or chop down a tree. Trees also throw shade on any other trees their size or smaller, including that player's own trees. When a tree is in the shade, it doesn't gain any sunshine points either. When a tree is chopped down, players take the token that coordinates with the plot the tree was on. Fun fact about Photosynthesis, all components for this game are made with 100% recycled materials. Alyssa, tell us about your thoughts on Photosynthesis.
It's pretty. I like it a lot. It's a really pretty game. More 3D components, which is kind of cool. The mechanics are really easy to pick up. I mean, Jackie, you taught me that game in what, like, a turn?
Yeah, basically.
Like just us moving the sun from one to another, not even a full rotation. The little card that sits in front of you has all of the numbers on it. so you don't have to like sit there and like have the manual next to you. Everything's right there. The component pieces are well made. It looks nice. I also like the part of me likes the sun mechanic. It just makes the game bulky because it can be, if you don't have a very big table, it can be a little hard to play on when you, if you've got like drinks or anything else on there. It's also definitely better with more people. I feel like that game was easier because it was just Jackie and I playing it at that time. But I feel like it could be much harder if you had like four people going all at once and you're like trying to strategically put your trees in a place where you're not going to like ruin your own trees, but also get other people's trees, but also still get points. So, I don't know. Be a good game. I like it a lot.
So where would you put it on your like it scale? 1 to 10.
Probably put that one at a 9. I like that game a lot. It was really chill.
Yeah, it's another sort of relaxing game. When we played it, we had, I think, 4 people. And it was a little more challenging. So I think you're spot on with that. Friend or foe?
I'm not even sure I would put it even on the scale like at all. I mean, you can get frustrated with other people, but like the game itself, can't even get mad at it. It's a good game.
Fair enough. Jackie, your thoughts?
I agree with Alyssa. It is a beautiful game. And of course, like all the trees are different colors and they stand up and that's really cool. I will have to say that when I was actually punching this game out, this was one of the most infuriating games to get prepared because they set it up so that like the first page of punches was all one side of the tree because the trees slide together in order to be able to stand up. And I was so confused because I was like, these trees won't go together. And then it's like 2 pages of punches later that you actually have the other half of the trees. So you can actually put them together as one total tree. And that might just be because I wasn't paying attention. But that was rather infuriating for me. As far as gameplay goes, I absolutely adore this game. I will agree with Alyssa. With a 2-player, one of the things that bogs it down is that you pass the first player token back and forth. And when there's only 2 players, it's basically like, you take 2 turns, now I take 2 turns, now you take 2 turns, now I take 2 turns. And that's a little, it does bog it down in a 2-player. In the 3 to 4 player games, I have not had that issue. Honestly, in the bigger games, it's so much nicer to have that first player token that rotates, because for one thing, it prevents people from getting an unfair advantage, but it also kind of helps you keep track of where you are in the round so that you know that it's time to move the sunlight and recount your sunshine points. So that's really nice too. It is very strategic, and this one actually is a little grittier than Takenoko, in my opinion. It has a few more rules. I feel like Takenoko has a lot of things that can be like, you can do it this way or this way, and you can use the mechanics to get to the same result in 2 or 3 different ways, whereas with photosynthesis, that isn't really an option. You can do whatever you have the sunshine points for in a turn, which keeps it nice and flexible, but your options are just so much more limited because your options are prep a seed or a tree, play that tree, get it chopped down, get your token. Like, that's the whole action of it. And that makes it really fun gameplay, but in some ways the game almost gets a little long, which is kind of why on my like it scale, I only put it at a 7. Is because I think the games can kind of drag on a little bit more than in Takenoko.
And the friend or foe scale?
I do put this at I'm honestly debating between an Uno and a Monopoly level on the scale. And I know that that is completely contradictory to what Alyssa said. But what? I know. And you're right, in a 2-player game, I think it's much more an Uno. It is an Uno scale, or maybe not even Uno in a 2-player game, because there isn't as much of the board being used, and so it's really easy to avoid ending up in somebody else's shade. However, in a 3 to 4 player game, when you're all competing over those spots, like, I met a person, the person who taught me, her strategy was to go around the outside of the board and build up all of her trees as tall as she could so that it was all throwing shade to the inside of the board. So literally all of your trees that you were going to get the most points off of, you wouldn't get any sunlight points for. And so you can literally use the strategy to like really screw people over. I also had a person who would use the inner circle that had all the 3-point tokens available. And he would just like keep rotating around that so I couldn't ever get to the 3-point tokens. So I could never get like the most points. So like there are so many strategies within the game that can be kind of broken so that people can so like destroy you with this game.
Building around the outside actually sounds like it'd be really funny, and I'm probably going to do that the next time we play this game. I'm just going to throw that out there now.
Great.
That just sounds like it'd be funny to do.
Yeah, you're going to be fighting over those same spots.
Exactly. It's yep. Like, and they're like the lowest points. Like the outside rim is the lowest point value. So like you're making it so it's harder for you to have points, but then you get all the sunshine points because then at any given time, wherever the tree is, or wherever the sun is, you're going to get at least that line of trees in points. Because there's nothing to block them.
Ah! It's really just about making it harder for everyone else.
Yep.
That's where that strategy shines, and I appreciate that.
Exactly, because, I mean, you could easily, if you had all medium trees on that line, you would have 8 points every turn, and you could potentially be blocking as many as, like, 16 points between players from the inside. So, like, yeah. It's infuriating.
Yeah, you can't win with all those three leaf trees if you can't get any sunshine to build any trees.
Yeah, I may have won the game where I taught Alyssa to play.
We don't talk about it, Jackie.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. I got one tree in every ring first, so I will take that as a win.
I just took all of the three leaf trees and actually won.
Rude.
Accurate.
She got the first three leaf trees, so she had the token with the most points in the game to begin with.
We'll just leave it at that.
Little victories.
It's the small things in life.
Right.
Kind of sorry.
All right, any final thoughts on photosynthesis?
It's cute. If you haven't
gone, just gonna say that for every game?
Maybe.
Okay.
Well, yeah, for this episode, yeah. If you have a dog that drools a lot, don't buy this game.
Really?
Because it's all cardboard.
Oh.
Or if you have a destructive cat.
Okay, I was going to say, why are you letting your dog drool on
your board games? You know what? I don't judge people. I don't know people's lives, but I'm sure it has come up.
I'm sure.
Was that a dog sneeze?
That was a dog sneeze.
Cute.
Yeah.
Dog, you're allergic to the basement. Go upstairs.
No, baby puppy.
All right, so our third and final game we're talking about today is Dinosaur Tea Party. This game is for 3 to 5 players and is produced by Restoration Games. Dinosaur Tea Party is a social deduction game that mimics Guess Who. The game includes 25 large cards depicting dinosaurs in evening wear as they are out for a spot of tea. The problem is players don't remember any of the guests' names and have to try and figure out who is who. Bottom of the card gives a list of traits that each dinosaur possesses, and players are each dealt a small character card that tells them which dinosaur they are. Tokens for the individual traits are available to both players, and as players make guesses, the tokens are added to the face-down card in front of them, denoting the guess was made and whether they were right or wrong. On a player's turn, they get to keep guessing until they make a wrong guess, then the turn passes to the next person. The game offers 3 wild card mechanics. There are 3 traits that are randomly assigned to the dinosaurs at the party. One of the traits is that the character always lies. One only ever responds with no, and one switches their answers. When a player guesses the right name, that player receives a sugar cube. The first person to 3 sugar cubes wins. After a dinosaur has been guessed, that card is flipped over, and the player who had that card draws a new one. Play continues until someone has 3 sugar cubes. Fun fact about Restoration Games, the company finds old games and gives them new life. They'll change up themes and mechanics to adapt the games to more modern gaming. Dinosaur Tea Party is one of the games they revitalized. How do you think they did, Jackie?
I think they did a good job, and I cannot for the life of me remember how long ago it was that the original Tea Party game was published. I'm assuming that the original didn't actually have dinosaurs. I think it was just like, Tea Party! And then they added the dinosaurs because it's gimmicky and funny, and the dinosaurs in evening wear is super hilarious. But yeah, I think they did a fantastic job with this game. It does very much, as Ethan mentioned, mimic Guess Who. You weigh out the cards in a 5x5 grid, and then they are all in different colored, well, not in all different colored rooms, but there's 3 different colors of the rooms, and then they're wearing different things, and some of them have freckles, and those are the kind of traits that you're trying to figure out who is who in this game. It's a really quick game. It plays in like 15 minutes or so. Super easy to learn because the rules are very simple and similar to other games. Definitely a good game to have in your repertoire if you are into social deduction games, or if you need to regularly play with more than four people, because it is for 3 to 5 people. And sometimes it's hard to find games that can accommodate more people. So I also think this game, it could easily be adjusted to add more people to it than 5, honestly, because you could easily just give people more cards. It'll just make it last longer. What about you, Alyssa?
I think this game would be a really rad party game, both as a drinking game and non-drinking game. I'm just going to throw that out there. mechanics are super easy, and you can teach friends who don't play board games how to play it super quick. It's Guess Who. I don't think I know a single person who has never played Guess Who. The cards are adorable. The art looks fantastic. And everything's really well made. Like you would think with the size of the game, you would be like, maybe it'll be a little flimsy. The cards are super solid. They're nice and big, so you can actually see like the details in the art. And there's even a little descriptive cards for all of the little traits and stuff that are on your card for which guest you have. But it's definitely something that doesn't, it's not, there's not really any strategy to it unless you get one of those quirks. But even then, it's right there. You lie, you always say no, or you just switch your answers, because why not? Definitely a good game, easy to play, nice and quick too. So
I feel like the switching answers one might actually be easier to find than you'd realize, because, you know, if you're having to switch your answers, basically you have to put out these tokens and it has an X on one side and it's not on the other. So if you ask someone the same question twice and they have to flip over one of their things, it's like, aha, that's you.
Right. My other thought was the same thing with the always says no, because after yep. like after the third one, I mean, realistically, you could just be that bad and just like not guess anything. But at the same time, it's like, I see you. This is the third time you've said no, and that was a reasonable. I've seen multiple dinosaurs with that going on, so I'm gonna have to call your shenanigans on that one.
Exactly. The one that always lies, I think, would be the toughest one.
I feel like it would be the hardest one to actually like have to do, because you need to make it believable enough that it's not like we got you, you're lying. So you'd have to make it like actually believable, but I think it's a good fun mechanic to add.
It is, because you could be really strategic about it. You know, you could almost like throw people off by saying like, yeah, I'm totally in an orange room when you're in a purple room. And so then they'd be thinking that, you know, you could be in there. And then, yeah, you could just lead people totally astray
right.
with that one. And you probably wouldn't figure it out until the very end, to be honest.
Or you'd get maybe what, like, don't they usually have like 6 traits? Mm-hmm. I think they get like, so I feel like if once you got like maybe 4 in, I think people would finally be like, they'd be looking at it and they're like, I don't know about that.
We've already decided you weren't this dinosaur, so you must be the liar.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that's about the time you get caught, but it's a cute mechanic. I like it.
Me too. It definitely gives it a fresher start than Guess Who, you know, because Guess Who is just like, here's the person. Is it this one? Nope. That one? Nope. And so here it's like, here's this like really weird mechanic. It's like, you're actually allowed to cheat, essentially.
Right.
It's like, okay.
I'm into it.
So where would you put it on the like it scale?
For me, this one's only a 6 on the like it scale, but that's only because I don't play these kinds of games. Like,
I'm so upset with you right now.
I know. I'm so sorry. It's like, it is super cute. It is very well made. I think Restoration Games did an excellent job in how they revitalized this game and made it so a modern audience would enjoy picking it up. I think this is one of those games that should be available at like Walmart and Target, because this is something anybody could learn to play. And it would be a great gateway game. I agree with Alyssa on that. But I just, social deduction games are just not really my thing. Even though it's nice to have a game around that you can accommodate more people for, I also really prefer a game that you can play with 2 people. But that's because at any given time, I can usually only find 1 person to play with me at a time.
Alyssa.
I'm going to give it an 8 because you're wrong. I like it. Then again, I also like any game that I can work into a drinking game without changing the mechanics of the game. You get something wrong, take a drink. Hey, party game. Makes it nice and easy. The cards are solid enough that if you did make it a party game, it's not going to get thrashed as badly as it could. And it's just easy. It's easy and fun to play. And you can be like, hey, y'all want to play this game? Cool. We can set it up in 2 seconds. We can tear it down in 2 seconds. It'll take 15 minutes to play. So anybody with a short attention span, you play around, you're done, and then move on to something else.
That's a good point. This game's also a really easy game to, like, add house rules to.
Oh,
like,
definitely.
If you're somebody who's like, oh, the rules, there's too many in this book, I'm just going to cut, like, half of them out. Like,
right.
You could easily do that and still have a good game.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Friend or foe?
Ooh, for me, it is definitely, it's not even on the, well, I guess it could be Uno on the foe scale just because of those random traits, like the person who constantly lies and the switching stuff, because that, if you aren't prepared to kind of, like, suss out those, or if you don't have kind of an agreement with everybody else to try to figure out who those people are first, then I think that could be a point of tension in the game, because it would just be more, yeah, it's just another line of strategy, and especially with the liar component, like, I'm not entirely sure if someone actually had that card, how you would find them until, like, at the very end of the game. Chances are somebody's going to win before you figure out who the liar is.
I'm not even going to put it on the scale.
Not on the scale?
Not at all.
No. Not worth it.
Too
not
cute.
Not worth it. Yeah, it's too cute. That and, like, man, Guess He was, like, one of my favorite games. So, like, to see this is, like, not, I don't want to call it a grown-up version, because you could definitely play this with, like, teenagers or even kids, like, again, small pieces, but
you could easily play this with kids that aren't going to try to eat the pieces, because, like, even the, there's not very many words on the cards.
Nope.
It's all pictures, so mm-hmm. You can teach the kids, like, this is what that picture means and stuff like that,
right? Or even they could just say what the little icons look like, because, like, the pet one's like a little, look like a little tiny pink T-Rex, and then there's a stripes one, and, like, this, are you wearing a hat? Like, if long as they know their colors and they're not going to eat the pieces, play with kids, no problem.
Yeah,
solid family game.
Especially if your kid's maybe a big old nerd about dinosaurs.
Oh my god, yeah. Yes. That would be perfect.
Uh-huh. We were using a copy at our local game cafe, and so it was Pawn and Pint, the one, so you can borrow the games. And somebody, who I'm assuming was intoxicated when they played the game last, had left us a helpful, like, list of notes that I'm not really sure were that helpful to us. I'm guessing they were intoxicated when they wrote it, but it was totally things like, Tim, because they all have names, all the dinosaurs have names, Tim is totally a dinosaur. And I'm, like, going, yes, clearly Tim is a dinosaur. Like, all but one of these are a dinosaur. There is a stork in there. I'm not really sure why there's a stork, but it's like, the rest of these are all dinosaurs. And then there's, like, random little notes. And I was like, okay, so somebody had trouble looking at the pictures.
Yes. Yeah, solid game. I like it.
Would you say it's cute?
Yes.
This one was also cute. We could also name this episode Cute Games.
I don't know if I'd call it Cute Games, because I feel like there are definitely some games that are, like, much cuter. At least much cuter than Dinosaur Tea Party. Not to say that it's not cute, but there's definitely more much cuter games.
Well, this is the cutest episode of Meeple Skills so far.
I'll take that.
That's accurate.
All right. That's probably going to be the episode title now.
Cutest games of Meeple Skills.
Cutest episode ever.
I'm okay with this.
I like it. All right. Well, that does it for this portion of the episode. So we will move on to RPG Corner, covering Kids on Bikes, as well as our Kickstarter highlight of Gamecanopy. Of the Game Canopy Deep Space, which is a new gaming bag that Jackie will tell you all about.
This is the Role Playing Game Corner.
This month's RPG Corner, we're talking about Kids on Bikes, a very interesting rules light role playing game, very reminiscent of the feelings that I think shows like Stranger Things evoke in a lot of people who grew up in the generation where most of your friends, and you just hung out riding your bikes around town and getting into trouble. The core rulebook is only about 60 pages long, and character creation is simply done by deciding what age the character is going to be, picking a trope that matches the setting and an age group for that character. Then, dice are assigned. The dice with the most sides should be assigned to the trait that your character needs to utilize the most or be the best at, depending on their trope. Give that skill the d20, while the one you might use the least, you would give the d4. So rather than every time you need to make a skill check, rolling a d20 and adding a modifier, as you might expect with things like 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, instead you're just rolling the die that corresponds with that particular trait of yours. One of the appendixes within the book contains a list of common tropes for kids on bikes type scary thrillers, reminiscent of Stranger Things, It, or Stand By Me, and other sort of kids hanging out in the summer, riding their bikes around town. The GM and the players need to decide, as a group, what kind of setting the game should be set in. Where it's such a wide variety of genres you can hit on, they recommend a town big enough to have conveniences like hardware store and a local hangout spot, but small enough that a kid on a bike could get across it in an hour or so. It's a group storytelling experience that spans genres and is very reminiscent of the 1980s D&D kind of nerds and, like I said, just very Stranger Things feeling. The GM is encouraged to reach out to the players and have them make decisions on what they may find or help guide the direction of the game. Setting up a campaign for this game should include very detailed conversation with your players, including what kind of adventure they want, the size and amenities the town has, who their characters are, and how they relate to other characters in the game, and how the play mechanics will work. The mechanics can be discussed whether or not the group is okay with adding a pause or rewind feature. Something that's come up a lot in the tabletop role-playing game community is these sort of tools to make sure that everyone is on board with the type of content that's being explored within this game. Certain people have certain content they'd rather avoid, and that makes sense. So this pause or rewind feature gives a player a chance to rewind it back to a point where they feel safe, or they can pause and maybe discuss with their game master and figure out where it can go to make them feel the most comfortable. And additionally, it mimics a choose-your-own-adventure kind of story in this way, because if you never, turned to the page, saw what happened, and then pretended you didn't turn to that page, if you say you haven't done that, you're a liar. You're a filthy, dirty liar. But this role-playing game, just in general, has a lot of interesting features, and I like that they go out of their way to explain some things that, while many people might feel is common sense, may not be. One of the segments that really stood out to me was them describing playing a character with disabilities. The game went out of its way to explain that playing a character with disabilities is not meant to be the butt of a joke, but rather to add something to that character and to that gameplay, and just to make sure that you're handling it sensitively, and like I said, just reiterating the point that it's not there and not something you can do just to be funny or because you want to make fun of somebody with that disability. But it does allow for interesting play, and again, just giving that sort of reminiscent feeling of those elementary school and middle school summers, riding your bike across town, going to the convenience store, picking up candy and trying not to get hit by a car, or maybe running into, eldritch horrors, who knows? It depends. I think if you grew up on the East Coast, you're more likely to run into eldritch horrors. That is Kids on Bikes, created by Jonathan Gilmore and Doug Lewandowski, published by Infectious Play, Renegade, and Hunters.
The Kickstarter highlight.
This month, I am highlighting a gaming accessory. The Game Canopy Deep Space is a new bag available from Level 3B. This company has constructed three distinct styles of bags for optimal transportation of tabletop games to game night. The Vanguard can hold about 3 to 4 average-sized games. The Canopy holds 6 to 7 average-sized games. And finally, the new Deep Space can hold 10-ish average-sized games or your mega games like Gloomhaven plus a couple extras. Pledgers have to back at the $99 level or higher to get the smallest of the series, and $169 to get the Deep Space. This campaign is fully funded and will be wrapping up on June 4th. And as somebody who has to travel regularly to my game nights, I can see how a gaming accessory like this would be very much in need. In fact, just on last Friday, I was going to a friend's house with a bunch of games and it was raining and I'm like trying to put my coats and everything over my games so that they don't get wet, and they still got a little damp. These bags offer not only the opportunity to make sure that you're getting your games there in one piece, but also stacked in such a way that isn't going to hurt the integrity of the boxes. So check out this gaming accessory, the Game Canopy, on Kickstarter, available until June 4th.
That does it for this episode of Meeple Skills. Join us next month for what the hell's our theme next month?
We're actually having a crossover episode.
What?
We are. We're going to have special guests that you will have to wait and hear from later.
It'll be exciting. I'm actually super stoked for next month's episode.
I will give one, what's it called when things are leaked?
Spoiler?
One spoiler. Wow. It's about comic books.
Yes. The theme, we can tell the theme.
Okay.
Yeah, the theme is comic books.
Yes.
But it's a crossover episode with another podcast that's going to be super cool, and y'all should check it out. All right. Any final words before we sign off?
Thanks for listening to our podcast!
Yeah, thanks.
Get to that part.
Oh, well.
But they love hearing it from you, too.
Yeah, well, that's because we're great.
Well, duh.
We're the favorite parts.
Well, I would hope so. all right, so don't forget to check us out on project-nerd.com for all kinds of nerdy news and blogs and whatnot and many other great podcasts. You can support us and Project Nerd on Patreon. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at MeepleSkillsPod. On Instagram at MeepleSkills. You can follow me on Twitter at NerdMeet. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/NerdMeet_. You can follow Jackie on Twitter.
At Jackie_Lemmer.
There we go. And you can follow Alyssa on the Grams.
Got the good the Minty Fresh Gaming. Got plenty of pets and board games going on.
Yes. All right. I think that covers everything, right?
I hope so.
Okay, good. We'll see you next time.
Bye!
Bye!